A quick note about this podcast series and how it relates to our world. So I've completed and published 8 episodes for this podcast, with one of the episodes broken into 2 parts, plus I recorded a bonus Easter episode. These first 8 episodes comprise what I'm calling Season 1 of this podcast. In these 8 episodes, I've tried to unpack the first 4 chapters of Matthew, 4 chapters that cover Jesus' birth, his family's refugee experience, his baptism into a radical movement as an adult, his vision quest in the desert, the calling of the first disciples, and the beginning of an international campaign for a new society that he calls the Kingdom of Heaven. Season 2 will cover the next 3 chapters of Matthew, chapters 5 to 7, commonly known as the Sermon on the Mount. At this point, I have 6 episodes written out for those chapters, and I've just started recording one of them. If you haven't already noticed, I've also changed the name of the podcast. Yeah, I know. It's a little bit like the old joke where the guy wants to change his name because his name is John Crapper, and then he changes it to Peter Crapper. It's a little bit like that. I've altered the name of the podcast so that it is more findable by people looking for a Bible study podcast. So the new name is, wait for it, Bible Study, Parody and Subversion in Matthew's Gospel. That simple. John Crapper, Peter Crapper. Anyway, I want to thank all of my loyal listeners for hanging in there with me. Most of my listeners are here in the United States, and most of those here in California. But there are loyal listeners all over the world. The Buzzsprout analytics indicate that there are loyal listeners in France, Germany, Australia, and up in Canada, and in various parts of the U.S. In the first 4 episodes, there seemed to be a group in Israel-Palestine, which of course is awesome because that's where this story takes place. The history of that land from then until now is one filled with tragic irony. The story in Matthew takes place at a time when Jews were living under a brutal occupation there. But, as if a modern screenwriter were intentionally employing the technique of historical irony to write the history of that land, now Palestinians, who are in part descended from ancient Jews, suffer under a brutal occupation there by Israel. Meanwhile, Jews in other parts of the world continue to be persecuted. We've had 2 synagogue shootings here in the U.S. in the last 2 years. Cruel irony just seems to be part of our world. Which brings me to our current world situation, one in which a submicroscopic army of particles that scientists say are not even alive are holding us, a technologically advanced civilization, hostage. But this pandemic is teaching us a very important lesson, or it should be, and that is that we're all in this thing together. We all live in a world where random things can happen to anyone. And right now, one of those random things is happening to all of us almost all at once. Some may think that this is a qualitatively special circumstance, but the difference isn't qualitative, but quantitative. Random things happen to people all the time. It's just that the economic, social, and political structures of our world protect some of us from them more than others. But this time, we're experiencing something so overwhelming that it's finding its way around the normal barriers of those structures. The poor and the marginalized of our world are still getting it the worst, but even the rich and the powerful are having to hide out from it, biding their time, hoping it dies out before it reaches them. The lesson we should be learning is that we are all connected. No matter how much we try to separate ourselves with private property lines, national borders, and walls to keep people out, we are still all connected. And if we don't cooperate, we're going to suffer for it terribly. That's an especially hard lesson for many here in the United States. Ours is the most individualistic society the world has ever known. The delusion that each person is on their own, solely responsible for themselves, solely responsible for their own successes or failures, reigns supreme here. This is the place where libertarianism morphed from a left-wing, anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist ideology into a right-wing, pro-capitalist one. Capturing the fundamental ethos of U.S. libertarianism, someone has said, "Libertarians are like house cats, completely dependent on others, but fully convinced of their own independence." So only here in the whole world do people who can afford to shelter in place put their time and energy into staging armed protests against the cooperative effort to keep large numbers of people from dying from the virus. The culture in which the Gospel of Matthew was written was a far more collective culture. People understood that we are all connected. But it was a hierarchical culture. And the ideology of the empire and the ruling classes, combined with the economic and political structures they put in place, divided the peasants against each other. Jesus' speech in chapters 5 to 7 strives to liberate peasants from this ideology, to decolonize their minds, and also to affirm their traditional practices of economic solidarity. And that's what I think the Gospel of Matthew is all about: decolonizing our minds, liberating us to see the image of God in each other, and to build together a new world, a new society of grace and mercy without borders and walls, where everyone gets what they need, and where no one is left behind, and we all treat each other with reverence. So that's where I'm going with this podcast. I'm working on getting out the next few episodes. I hope you'll stay tuned in. And post any comments you have on our Facebook page. Until then, take care of yourselves and take care of each other. Honor the image of God in all people and stay connected. I leave you with this question from Chumbawamba.
We know what we want. We know what we've got. But what do we need? What do we need? We know what we want. We know what we want.